Greetings, fellow humans. Welcome to the Lead with Nature podcast.
I'm your host, Dan Grodoki. Humans share the Earth with over 8 million species and many unique habitats. This podcast is all about the interface between people and the rest of nature. We tell stories, share mysteries, and explore possibilities of living a more nature-conscious life. So what do you say? Let's get to it.
Welcome to episode 2 of the Lead with Nature podcast. I want to acknowledge a couple things right off the bat. Number one, there will be background noise. Because like many others, the space I'm using for this podcast also is the space others are using. So you may hear excited teenage boys talking to their friends, playing video games and other things, making a racket, banging in and stuff. And I'm okay with that. Thinking a lot about everyone today. Thinking about all the things that are challenging for us during this time. This pandemic is really testing our mettle. And it's easy to sometimes forget that there's a lot of people in a lot of different situations. And they're being affected in very different ways by this pandemic. Some of us are, you may be someone who's at home. You may be someone who's not an essential worker. So your stress is more about, you know, home stuff. Or you may be someone who's on the front lines. Medical, truck driving, grocery, manufacturing, whatever it is. And your stress is more about being as safe as you can and not bringing home anything and making your family sick. So my intention today is to share a few stories. A few stories from nature, a few stories of my own that may be a healthy, fun distraction. So that's my intention. Hope it goes well. And here we go. Last week, I took some time to dig up some old journals. And those of you who might follow me on Facebook or Instagram might have seen a picture I posted of all these journals sprawled out across the floor. And I was looking for stories in my journals. I was looking for stories that may be useful, may be interesting, may be a fun, yeah, interesting diversion right now during this time. And I decided on this one. So we'll start with this and we'll see where it goes from there. I call this one Refuge in a Thunderstorm. So why am I telling this story? Why did I choose this story? I'm a big fan of trying to be as transparent as possible and trying to kind of unpack and understand why we talk about what we talk about here on Lead with Nature podcast. And sometimes that's with my guests and sometimes it's going to be by myself. So I'm telling this story in particular because it is loaded with a lot. It's a story that took place in my life sometime in my early mid-30s. It was when I just was starting a new Nature Connection nonprofit. I was just building a home. I was having a first child. There was a lot going on. It was actually kind of an intense time. It was kind of a tough time. I got sick for a long time. It was challenging. It was hard. And as a result, I turned to nature for solace, for healing, for direction, for guidance. And if nothing else, maybe that's the most helpful part of this story tonight, is that you too can do the same thing during challenging times. Nature is always there for us. Nature has no agenda. And it's, you know, somewhere where you might be able to relax, breathe, taking all the healing benefits of the natural world. But that's another podcast for another night. So let me tell you a little bit about Refuge in a Thunderstorm. So this is sometime in the very early aughties, early 2000s. And, you know, I was looking for a break from just the fast-paced world, you know, of being a kind of a general contractor, land and homeowner, new family person, holding down, growing jobs and new organization while holding other side hustles. And I just was really trying to figure things out. You know, it might have appeared to many from the outside that, oh, I've got it all figured out. It's all great. But really deep down, I was like, holy crap, how do I pull this off? How does this actually all work? So I had recently been spending time with some good friends, some colleagues, really. And people I saw as kind of like brothers and uncles and mentors in my life. And one of them spent some time with me, and we talked a lot about kind of core values and our kind of our code of conduct. And I remember really having a great conversation with this person and realizing, like, you know what? I'm not 100% clear on that. What is my code of conduct? I mean, I think I know it, but have I ever really given it time and energy? What are my core values in life? Have I articulated them clearly? So for me, that was intriguing. And for me, that seemed like something that would be a good use of my time. And without even thinking about it, I told myself, well, yeah, that would be something I would have definitely do in nature, something I would definitely do outdoors, something I would definitely do somewhere special, somewhere, you know, interesting. So as soon as that idea got into my head, I realized, yeah, I need to do this. This is something I want to do, actually. And it would be a great excuse for me to go somewhere way out, away from people, on foot, and just slow down, tune into what's happening there, and take it from there. So how do I pick a place? How do I decide where to go? So say maybe you're looking to do some time, some solo time, some wilderness time, or some family time in wilderness areas, or just something to get kind of out of the rat race, off the grid, etc. So for me, I'm a little old school. I was born and raised mostly in the 1900s, and here we are in the 2000s, and well, I've adapted rather well. I'm a big fan of paper maps. So for me, I started studying paper maps. I started looking at the maps around my region, the old USGS topographic maps, and started looking for big kind of roadless chunks of woods and, you know, a lot of forest and cover, and started studying those maps, looking at the topographic lines, that meaning the lines that show where there's, you know, steep cliffs and hills and things like that. And I wanted to go somewhere where there might be some caves or cliffs. I wanted to go somewhere where I might be able to find some refuge. It was summertime, regularly get thunderstorms, and I thought it'd be cool to have a little place to kind of hunker down. Maybe somewhere I could make a fire. So after studying some maps and building upon my existing knowledge, because I'm a big fan of exploring my place, and I knew a lot about, you know, the lands around where I live, and so I found a spot. And I was like, yeah, that's my spot. That's where I'm going to go. So picked time and a day and thought, all right, I want to go spend at least half a day in this place, maybe more, maybe spend the night. So I packed a small light bag with a few essentials, you know, little means of making fire, some water. I decided not to bring any food intentionally on this trip. I just didn't want to eat, didn't want to distract myself with food. But, you know, some people, that's fine. Brought I think a very small lightweight blanket in case I needed that for some reason. But it's summer, I thought it'd be fine, but who knows, maybe for bugs or something like that. Knife, a few other basics. So threw them in a tiny little backpack and just kind of cruised out into the woods in a nearby spot. So you kind of picture this. So here it is, a summer afternoon, maybe around 2, 3 o'clock. Sun's not going to get down to like 8 o'clock at night. So I've got hours to kill. And it's a pretty warm day and you can hear insects going, birds singing, you know, flies buzzing. It was pretty summery, hat on to keep the bugs off my head. I just took to my time kind of meandering my way out into the woods, long sleeves and long pants, because it gets pretty dang buggy here in Maine, folks, let me tell you. Not always fun. And I just, you know, took some trails I knew would head towards where I wanted to go. Took my time. Didn't hurry it. Didn't rush it. But I was kind of excited to get there, too. But I forced myself to stop now and again and listen, look, feel what's happening around me. It's just part of my practice that I try to do as a naturalist, as someone who's trying to pay attention to the world bigger than myself, the more-than-human world, as I call it. So, yeah, there's one of my children stomping around. anyway, so there I am heading out, and I'm kind of paying attention to the weather and thinking, like, ooh, it feels like there's a storm building, man. Storm building coming in from the west. You could see those cumulus clouds building, alto cumulus, and maybe even more. And cumulonimbus, and that being the big thunderheads, the big broad clouds that are circulating moisture back up into the cloud, and the cloud's getting taller and higher, and eventually the cloud's going to create its own weather, and it's going to create a differential of ions and charges, and we're going to get lightning and thunder, which is kind of cool and exciting and a little daunting, right? A little scary, a little edgy. And honestly, most adventures, well, they're better with a little edgy, a little scary, a little uncomfortable. So, you know, that's something I'd said and something I believed, and I was feeling it. I was like, all right, here we go. Putting myself out here. Let's see how this whole thing goes. So, made my way out to the spot I was thinking of and found that spot. Explored some kind of cliffs and found a couple little overhangs, not quite caves, but spots where if it did start raining pretty hard, I'd probably be pretty dry, unless that rain was coming from the south. These were kind of south-facing open cliffs. And if there was a wind and a rain driving from the south, I'd be soaked no matter what. But, you know, most of our big storms here in New England come from a different direction. Do you know what direction that is? In the summer? Think about it. Standing at the beach, watching the clouds, thunderheads build up. Where are they? Are they in front of you out towards the ocean, or are they behind you towards the sunset? Yeah, it's the west. So these storms were also building in from the west. And, you know, I just kind of was watching it and thinking about it. And, you know, maybe one or two times I thought, oh, maybe this isn't the best time to be out here. And I was like, oh, shut up. You're making excuses. You're being weak. That's, come on, you can do better. You'll be fine. And I was like, yeah, I know. So anyway, got my little cliff spot, and I decided to set up a little mini fire just in case. Just in case I wanted it, just in case I needed it. Maybe I can cover it up with something that would be a little waterproof and keep me dry. So as I sat there, I watched the weather. I listened to the birds, I listened to the bugs, I listened to the wind going through the oak trees and the birch trees, and I listened to the leaves rustling and watched the colors change in those leaves as they blew in that wind, and a storm was building. And I thought to myself, probably the most basic question I like to ask myself, often in nature, but definitely not just in quote-unquote nature in the outdoor world, and sometimes with people around me too, is probably the most important question is, what's happening here? What does this mean? So I asked that question. You know, and on a simple scientific meteorological level, what it meant was, there's a storm coming. On a deeper kind of human level, it could mean anything, including, there's a storm coming. And I knew I went out there seeking something. And, you know, at risk of making this kind of more personal psychobabble, I will just say, I needed this. There was something out there that was waiting for me. Something I needed to learn, something I needed to think about. And one of the things I knew was code of conduct and kind of my values, getting really clear on those. So I did bring a journal as well, by the way, that I could do some journaling in. So I took out that journal and I started spending time journaling. I started thinking about, what are the things I care about most in this world right now? What kind of people? What kind of places? What kind of processes, values, beliefs are most important to me? And the storm kept building, man. The storm kept getting intense. And then the rain started coming. I could see that kind of gray haze coming down from the clouds to the west. And I thought, oh yeah, this is coming here. And I noticed birds kind of flying from west to east. And then, sure enough, the rains came. And it was just, I can't even do it. It was just crazy deluge of rain, like a wall of rain. And remember, I'm in like this huge rocky cliffy area. So within a minute or two, all of a sudden the water comes just cascading down the rocks themselves, just hanging to the rocks. So even though I was in an overhang in a protected area, and even though the wind wasn't blowing out of the south, that water just clung to those rocks and just kind of came over that overhang and started running over my feet and kind of dripping down on my shoulders, and I'm getting soaked. Not directly by the rain, but indirectly by the rain. So there's a moment, right? And it's a moment where I can be upset and I could kind of cower and freak out, or it's a moment where I could just accept what's happening and say, yeah, I'm wet. Yeah, it's summer. I'll be fine. It's warm. And I was pretty good about doing that. So, you know, I wasn't dry. I just gave in to the water. I knew the water was going to be part of this journey, part of this process. And here I was. So I just decided at this point, like, screw it, I'm just going to immerse myself in this. Now, luckily, I did have an old Ziploc in the backpack, and I put that journal after doing some writing and reflecting, which was helpful. But it really was maybe 15, 20 minutes. I don't even know. I wasn't looking at a clock or anything. At that time in my life, I refused to carry any sort of timepiece. I was too righteous and thought I knew too much. So anyway, didn't have enough responsibility, I guess. But anyhow, so there I was, and I was like, yeah, I'm done journaling. I'm not going to be able to write anything because everything's getting soaked. And there I was, and I was just getting wet. I was like, well, I'm just going to let it give into this thing. So the decision was there. I made it. I just said, that's it. I'm going with it. And that instantly brought me back to something I'd forgotten about, like almost truly forgotten about. Think about it now. Like, how many of us have times in our life we've completely forgotten about things that were so hugely important to us, things that were so much a part of our being, so unique to us, maybe so personal. And this is kind of a detail. It's a kind of private and personal, but I'll share it with you because it's important to me today to talk about deep nature connection. And as a teenager, as I struggled with figuring out who I was and all that kind of crap and family and this and that, which is important stuff. That's what you do sometimes as a teenager or a young adult or sometimes older. But the rainiest of nights, the craziest of storms, I would sneak out of my house. I would often strip down with just a pair of running shorts. I would just run barefoot through the woods on trails. I had a park somewhere near where I lived. I was super fortunate, super privileged. And that's what I would do. And I would just like run through that rain. I would get so wet and soaked and dirty, and I just loved it. It was like super important to me. And I just like at some kind of base level, it was healing. It was really important to me. And that totally came back to me as that water started soaking me. And then I thought, all right, that's what I'm doing. Didn't know this was coming, but that's clearly what's going to happen here. And at that point, I made the call. I was like, I am running. So I picked up that backpack, packed everything in it, and started running, just quietly cruising down the little trails. And the rain just kept coming down harder and harder. It wasn't just one of these 20, 30 minute thunderstorms. It was like, well, at this point, it was only probably 15 minutes, 20 minutes, but this thunderstorm kept going, let me tell you. And I just started running, and running trails, actually, I didn't even know that well, but I kind of knew enough of the landscape because I studied those maps beforehand. I could picture like, okay, well, if I keep going east, I'm gonna hit this pond. If I keep going south, I'm gonna hit this road, yada, yada, yada. So my mind's eye, you know, had a base map kind of to work off of. So I didn't worry about where I was going or not going. And I know that's also a privilege as, you know, a healthy, young, fit adult male in an area, you know, pretty safe. And I took that for granted at the time, and which is fine. But, you know, now I realize, yeah, that's pretty, I'm pretty fortunate of me. So there I am just running, cruising, taking my time in some ways, but just smoothly running through the woods. Occasionally stomping on something or poking my foot a little bit. I was totally barefoot through my, I think, sandals or whatever I had, and sneakers in my backpack, and I'm just cruising through the woods. And I remember I came around this one curve, and there's some turkeys. Turkeys. Flock of wild turkeys. And yeah, I know these days turkeys are super, super common, but back then they actually weren't as common. And it was a group of, it was a flock of, you know, maybe four or five hens and maybe, I don't know, 6 to 10 kind of, you know, little poults or kind of, you know, young of the year. And they're quietly feeding away on the edge of this trail in the brush on some vegetation or berries. I don't even remember what it was, but I was able to stop myself and just squat down really fast and watch it. And because of the wind and rain and everything else, I was just pretty much invisible. And they couldn't hear me. They couldn't smell me. And they probably didn't see me all that well because I was super still. Not more still than anyone else, just being still, but I just watched these turkeys. I could smell those turkeys, actually. It's one of the first times I was like, wow. Yeah, smells kind of like wet, feathery, chicken-y stuff or something like that. And so I could smell those turkeys. And I just got that feeling, like that predatory feeling. Have you ever had it? I mean, we probably, many of us have had that even just playing like hide-and-seek or manhunt or something else. Like when you're just like, I'm watching something and it doesn't know I'm watching it. You know what I'm talking about? So there I was doing that. And I just did that for a while, and I let those turkeys move off to a point where I didn't want to spook them. I didn't want to like all of a sudden stand up and then them go and take off and flush and make a mess. And they were just quietly feeding. I didn't want to disturb that. Like, who am I to disturb that? Too many humans, we do that so often without consciously even putting any thought towards it. We put our agenda before the agenda of wild things. Our agenda before the agenda of the more than human world. And as a result, I think we lose trust. I think we lose kinship. I think we lose a lot in those relationships. So I just waited. And it wasn't easy. My knees were kind of funky and hurting at the time. And, you know, I had like dirt running in my eyes from a bunch of water splashing back. And I was like, oh, whatever, I'll be fine. It's not a big deal. And that turkey family, they eventually just wandered off. I felt really good about that. Like, that was cool. That was awesome. And of course, I asked myself, what does this mean? What is this telling me? What can I learn from this? And I took that with me as I moved on. And I kind of slowed my run to kind of a little jog and then eventually to a little walk. And I ran some more. And then I was catching myself thinking about the future. I lost the present, right? Because here's something in the story is like, you may have noticed, the first chunk of the story is all about the future. Like picking this idea of going and doing this kind of little, you know, experience and preparing for it and what's it going to be like and packing a bag and heading out and heading towards the spot. But then as soon as I was in that spot, it was all about the present. It was all about the moment. That's a great place to be for me. It's a magical place to be. I feel like I'm there right now with you in that moment. Maybe you can feel that. So at this point in the story, though, I started to think about the future. I started to picture where I left my car. I started to picture what it would be like to go home. What it would be like to be dry. What it would be like to eat. I was given into those creature comforts. And I caught myself. I was like, no, no, no. Don't do that. Come on, man. You're here. You put all this into this. You're here. Don't wimp out. Put that domesticated human aside. Let that wild human be here. And I was able to catch it. I was fortunate for that. Fortunate about it. And so I just kept cruising. I probably wanted for another, I don't even know, 20. Again, no watch. Maybe half an hour. And I stopped caring about if I was, quote unquote, lost or not, because I knew sooner or later I'd find my way to wherever I wanted to be simply by following basic directions or flows of water, because I'd studied maps and all that. And I came to what we call a right-of-way, like a power line. Like, basically, picture, I'm in a thick, this is a super forested area. So super thick forests all over the place. And then there's these breaks in the forest. And through these breaks run things like power lines, you know, or hydro lines if you're in Canada. Hydroelectricity and all this other stuff. Or maybe there's pipelines underground buried. In this case, it was just simple power lines. And so this power line little break, I found myself coming up towards it, and you could see the rain was way heavier out in the open than it was being filtered through the trees. And I kind of was tempted I just wanted to go out there and feel how intense that rain was on my skin to really just kind of take it in. So I slowly made my way up towards the edge of the power line, but then all of a sudden I saw some movement out in that open. And I just instinctively drop down. So I'm squatting there and I'm just quietly looking. I'm like, what is that? What? I think I just saw something. And it was hard with the rain. I'm trying to like wipe the rain out of my eyes and kind of shield my eyes with my hand. And I look forward and sure enough, yeah, there's movement. There's definitely movement out in this power line. And I'm looking at it. And it's like, there's something brown and it disappears. Oh, there's another one. Wait, there's at least two. There's like four. Holy crap, what are those? And then I realized those are fishers. So, if you don't know what a fisher is, Google it. A fisher is a member of the weasel family. It's kind of like an otter, a little furrier. It's like an otter who lives in the woods, shorter tail, furrier, zip up and down trees. Where I live in New England, they have this strange like reputation as being quote-unquote fierce and vicious, yada yada, which I think is just some strange judgment because they're super efficient predators like many others, including humans at times. Anyway, the fisher, with something called a fisher cat. It's not a cat. It is a member of the weasel family. This was a mama fisher and her three kits, her young of that year. Those young are born back in a den and usually late March, early April where we live. Super fascinating little breeding cycle where they actually breed like sometimes within a few weeks of giving birth and fertilize an egg. Sperm, the egg come together and it's fertilized, and that thing sits, I believe it sits in the late implantation in the uterus, so it must sit in the fallopian tubes. Anyway, it sits there for months and months, like a 9 month delayed implantation, then eventually drops down, implants in the uterine wall, and develops. She has the babies, and it's a super funky cycle. A lot of weasels have this, not necessarily to those exact numbers. So anyway, regardless, there's these wild predators, these beautiful animals in this power line right of way, and they're feeding on the ground, eating, biting, sliding their mouths along these little plants, these low-growing green plants. And I start to realize, blueberries. They're eating wild blueberries. Wild blueberries, as many of us know now, it's one of the most amazing foods. It's truly a superfood with amazing antioxidants and all sorts of amazing vitamins and minerals. And so there they are just feasting on these. And a lot of people don't think about predators and berries, but many do eat them. And it was just wonderful to watch. So I just sat there, again, squatting, kind of sitting and watching. And I'm maybe 20 feet away, watching this family of fishers just feast in the middle of this thunderstorm, listening to the thunder kind of rolling away now at this point. They're going into the distance. Very little lightning left. And at that point, the wind shifts, and it goes a little bit northwest, and I'm just northwest of them. And poof, Mama Fisher picks up the scent, lets out a little... a lot of people think people blame fishers for all sorts of things, including screeching through the middle of the night and blood-curdling screams, which I don't believe actually are probably happening or true. I believe it's often red fox and other critters. Anyway, she lets out a little grunty squeak. And all of a sudden the young, poof, instantly turn, run towards her. They all run up towards this big dead pine tree, and they go straight up this tree. And at that point, I instinctively turn and run towards them. It's just predatory response, which I have sometimes towards wildlife. When it runs away, I chase it. Been like that most of my life. For better, for worse, it's what I do. So I run. I run towards them. They run up the tree. And then she gets about half when she lets the young go before her. It's a picture of these three little young climbing like huge squirrels up this rotten old pine tree, but solid enough. And then she goes after them, and they're up about 20, 30 feet now, scurrying, jumping branch to branch. And then she stops at about 10 feet and looks at me. And when she does that, I stop, and she picks up on that little pause that I take and zips back down the tree and goes, and she's gone. So now her young are by themselves, 30 feet up a pine tree. And there's me staring at them, soaking wet with a backpack, some dude in the middle of the woods. She's long gone, or at least as far as I know, I don't see her anymore. I don't detect her anymore. She could be very close, but I don't see her. And I'm standing there with these young. It's me and three fishers. In the end of a thunderstorm, the middle of the Maine woods, their bellies are full of blueberries. They're blinking a lot from the rain. I just start talking to them because I think they're awesome. I want to let them know what I'm doing there. Let them know I'm not going to bother them. I can feel they're concerned. I can feel their anxiety, their fear. I'm a large predator, eyes on the front, hands out, I'm 2 feet. I mean, I'm generally trouble for most wild animals. It's been that way for a long time here with humans and most other wildlife. So I was like, hey, it's all right. I'm not going to bother you. I'm okay. And I didn't get any closer to that tree. And I just kind of looked around and scurried up down a little bit. They made some low little grunts. And they just sat and watched. One hung on a branch, legs dangling. I wondered where Mom was, so I just started talking to them, and I felt like, oh man, I had a baby at this time, by the way, so I think I had a little dad empathy. And I just was like, hey, it's gonna be okay, she'll be back. Started kind of talking to them and talking them down, so to speak. Like, yeah, guys, chill out, Mom will be there, it's gonna be all right. And then instinctively I just decided I should sing them a song. So I did. And I sang them a song like few times, and I won't share what that song was because it was a very special song to me at the time. But I did that, and then I stepped back even further, and when I did, they slowly came down that tree and went and followed Mom's trail. headed off to the east. And at that point, I told myself, I think I'm done. I think I'm ready to go. So at that point, I shifted my attention towards where I was headed, thinking about where my car was, thinking about, oh, crap, I even have the key. Oh, no, I stuck it on the wheel. All right, where's it going to be? Blah, blah, blah. How many huge puddles or ruts on the way out? Am I going to be able to get out in the mud? And I was like, no, just be again. Be, just enjoy this walk out, man. Don't do that. It's hard sometimes, right? It's really hard. So anyway, I did that. I took my time. I got out to the car, took some breaths, was like, all right. This was sweet. This was good. And made my way back and, the sun started peeking out just around that same time. Like, no joke. It was like literally a few sun rays coming in from the west. That like kind of hot, humid after a thunderstorm feeling. It wasn't one of those like, oh, the nice cool winds came after the thunderstorm. No, it was still pretty hot. There were still bugs popping out. And I just felt good. I felt like I was just part of the scene, part of the landscape, you know, that whole weird thing we sometimes have between humans and nature, feeling like we're two different things. Like there's this false dichotomy, I would say, this delineation between us. That thing felt faded away. Maybe you know what that feels like. And maybe you don't, and you're looking for that. It's there. Go get it. So I took my time, heading home, literally like soaking my beat up old Honda Accord car seat at the time. And came home, unpacked everything. Don't remember any other details really from there, but apparently I journaled some more because I found it in the journal, and I did come up with a set of core values. I did come up with my kind of code of conduct, and it was so cool to look at that recently. So interesting to look at it too, to reflect upon that time in my life, to reflect upon how much of it is still valid and true for me today, and to reflect upon the power of nature during that time in my life. And to remember that's always there, right? It's always there for us. Here we are in a time of pretty serious challenge, right? Yeah, we got this pandemic. We got this wild natural thing that's zipping through our population and kind of humbling us and reminding us that we are just one of many things in the world. And we're not always in charge. And that virus can be unnerving, can be disturbing. And I just want to remind people that we have, you know, we have a world, we have people around us, our family, you know, we have the sky, we have the land, we have birds, trees, parks. If you're lucky enough to spend some time in those places, do that. Do it. It's so important. Go take some breaths. Go sit down, slow down. Go watch some pigeons. Go watch some squirrels. Go watch some birds, doves, geese. Go to a pond. Go to a river, go for a walk, whatever it is, take some time for yourself, especially during these hard times. It's really important. So that's the long and short of my story of refuge in a thunderstorm. And I hope that you can find refuge in a storm of sorts right now as well. Refuge in the natural world, the world that we are a part of, the greater than human world that has always been there for us and will always be there for us, good, bad, or ugly. You know, the famous naturalist and scientist E.O. Wilson, you know, was the first person to publish this idea of, and this is the modern day publications of something called biophilia, which, you know, to a lot of indigenous cultures around the world for many millennia, was just, in many ways, simple as breathing and an assumption. But in this case, that he put forth this publication that said, we have biophilia. We have basically an innate desire to be connected to the rest of the natural world. And it does something for our soul. It does something for our spirit. It does something for our mind. It does something for our body. There's tons of research out there. If you're at all skeptical, go to places like the Children of Nature Network. Type in, why is nature good for me? In Google, you'll find out why. Folks, we have a refuge in a thunderstorm. We have a refuge in a time of pandemic, and that refuge is called outside. And I want to encourage all of you here to do that. We call this Lead with Nature because nature was here before us, and nature will be here after us, and we are part of nature, but you know, bring nature into your lives right now. Find ways to do that. There's tons of great resources. I'm happy to help you. I want to encourage you to reach out to me. Send me an email. DM me on Instagram at Lead Nature, on Facebook at Lead Nature, all wherever you want. But I just want to say, nature's here for us during this time. And I hope this story today was a nice distraction, a nice diversion, and I hope you're all doing okay. And I hope you're all talking about how you're doing, even if you're not doing okay. And I hope you're helping each other out. It's not easy. We all have to adapt and adjust. It's time to be resilient, folks. It's time to be strong. You know, hard times make for strong people. Good times are fun and easy and don't necessarily make for strong people, but hard times like this make for strong people, and this is only going to make us stronger, but we got to help each other out in the meantime. So that is it today from the Lead with Nature headquarters, and thank you all for listening, and may you be well. Hey folks, Dan here again. So what'd you think? Hey, I'd love to hear your thoughts, any feedback you might have about today's episode. You can comment on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter anytime, or shoot me an email. And one more thing. If you're enjoying the Lead with Nature podcast, pop on over to leadwithnature.com. Learn more about the work I do. Did you know that I do consulting and training for businesses, custom programs, one-on-one mentoring services? Basically, for the past 30 years, I've just been tempering my skills as an educator, naturalist, business leader, and consultant. I've worked with hundreds of clients, individual, business, nonprofit, you name it. I'm curious how I might be able to provide some support or solutions to you and your business, some perspective, some help. So check out leadwithnature.com today. Send me a message. Let's talk. Our music's composed by Jay Gardoki. Find Jay's music wherever beats are sold.